Underwriting support for Between the Stacks comes from Lakeville Books and Stationery, 329 Main Street in Lakeville, Connecticut, offering a wide selection of illustrated books, fine writing needs, and more. On the web, lakevillebooks.com. Robin Hood Radio presents Between the Stacks, a weekly chat about our local libraries.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Gretchen Hochmeister, the Executive Director of the Hotchkiss Library of Sharon, and I'm joined by Tammy Gaskell, the Executive Director from the Rojan Library over the state line in New York. So it's good to be here with you, Tammy, and today I think our topic is fundraising. You know, it's so much more than just the money, right? It's about building relationships and finding new people and new revenue sources, new ideas, trying to change things up. But there's some always good tried and true things we all rely on in our fundraising. And I guess just to start, I'll say that we raise about 65% of our annual operating expenses are covered by fundraising. So that would be annual appeal, solicitations, and events. So how about you over at Rojan? What does the landscape look like for you?
We're in a very similar situation. Only less than 35% of our budget is currently covered by tax funds or public resources. So the rest of it, 65%+, does come from fundraising or grants, which is a form of fundraising. Most libraries in New York are much better off in that regard. They're 80 to 90% publicly funded, but our library is one of those that's still working towards that goal.
And why is that? Is it an older library that was established before?
I think it's largely, it's historical reasons. New York has a number of different kinds of libraries, and we are an association library, which is a nonprofit and not a true public library. And association libraries tend to have fewer public resources just because of historical reasons. We also serve
three
towns, which makes it a little bit more difficult for us as far as getting those tax monies, because we have to go to the towns with a ballot and get the voters to approve additional funding. And we have three towns to do that in, and we want to be fair and not have one town paying a disproportional share. So, you know, for historical reasons, again, you know, we've had some towns that have supported us more than others. So just makes it a little bit more challenging than for some other libraries.
Yeah, absolutely. We're an association library as well. We are, I'm sure it's the same in your situation, but we are recognized by the state of Connecticut as the principal public library of Sharon, but we are not a municipal entity. So we, too, are a 501c3. That's right. I know you just recently had your big fundraiser a couple of weeks ago, right after we last spoke. So I know that you do that, but why don't you give me a sense of sort of your year in fundraising, how it looks and what it entails?
Right. Well, as you mentioned, we do have one big event a year, and that is our gala, or we've called it lately the party on the mountain, to make it feel a little less formal, because it is not a formal event. And we just had that last week on Saturday, and that includes, we raise money through ticket sales, but also we have a silent auction and a live auction, and including just a cash auction where we would have a match. Some generous donor has provided a match that if we can raise a similar amount of money, we'll get that match. So those are all ways the gala raises money, and the gala raises nearly a quarter of our revenue for the year.
Wow, that's great.
Our other fundraisers are at the end of the year, we do an annual appeal, as I think many libraries do. And then in the spring, we do another appeal around National Library Week, which is in April. So we have two sort of mail solicitation appeals, as well as the big gala. The other thing we do is we have business partners. We solicit the businesses in the area to support the library at various levels. And those businesses then get listed on our website. We put out a directory of the businesses that support the library, which is useful if you're looking for somebody who does carpentry or is a plumber, or that directory is very useful, especially for new people moving into the area. And we can always say you're supporting a business that supports the library, which is not a bad thing.
That's a great idea, especially since you serve three towns. You have a larger pool of businesses to pull
from. What sorts of things does the Sharon Library do?
Very similar. We have an annual appeal that's closing out very soon. The end of our fiscal year is coming up in about 2.5 weeks on June 30th. So we are in the final reminder stages for people who have not supported us yet this year. But our big push on the appeal begins in the fall. For people looking at their year-end giving. We have various levels of giving societies for the higher donors, higher-end donors, larger amounts, and we have a separate reception for them. But we certainly also try to do something for everybody who gives, right? Because every gift and every dollar is important to us. And then we have two large events every year. The book signing, and we too have a gala, which we held about a month ago in mid-May. And that used to be smaller, and it has gotten larger over the years. So they're both pretty major events, and it's hard because one is in the spring, and then we have the event that we're known for, our annual book signing. And this year will be the 27th annual Sharon Summer Book Signing on August 1st and 2nd. Is a really fun event that everybody loves, and a lot of work for the staff, as is the gala. The book signing we start planning that in November for the following August, recruiting authors, finding out who has new books coming out, who might be fairly local or willing to travel, getting a wide range of books, fiction and nonfiction and children's books, to cover a wide range of interests. That also entails a group of author dinners after the book signing, which is in the late afternoon, early evening, and then at 7:30 we have 8 dinners in local homes with one of the authors from the event, so that people would have more of a chance to have a conversation with the author. And this year we're expanding it, and on Saturday, August 2nd, we're having an all-day event centered on cookbooks and cooking. And we have 6 cookbook authors, chefs, and food media people coming to each lead an hour of the day. It should be really fun. Daniel Leader's coming. He was the founder of Bread Alone Bakery in your neck of the woods and further over on the Hudson. He's sort of the king of sourdough. And he'll be doing a demonstration. We have a talk on Southern baking with the author and baker Ann Byrne. Bruce Weinstein and Mark Scarborough, who are great friends of many libraries over here in Connecticut for knitting and literary seminars, have also published 30 cookbooks together as a team, and their latest is on cold canning, so canning food without hot water processing in small batches, and they'll be giving a demo. Chris Morocco will be with us, who is the food director of Bon Appetit and Epicurious, and Jesse Sheehan, a local resident and baker, will be here as well. And then we are winding up the day with cocktails and conversation with a novelist, Adam Roberts, who just published his debut. He's a well-known food blogger and cookbook writer, but he's now written a novel called Food Person. So he'll be the end of the day. So we're excited to be expanding and maybe attracting some new people and supporters who are really interested in cooking and cookbooks. So all of these things take a lot. Are you the main fundraising person, or do you have a fundraising professional as well?
No, we do not have any staff who are professional fundraisers. The fundraising is primarily the responsibility of the board. It's their responsibility to make sure that we have the funds we need to operate the library. And we have a development committee, which is comprised of board members and a few non-board members who have some development experience. And, of course, I'm a member of that committee, too. So I do get brought into it, as does we have a communications person on staff. And because communications is key to all of this, she's also involved. So staff do get pulled in, but it is not primarily our responsibility. I also want to mention our friends group. I'm sure many, many libraries have friends groups, not all, but many. And our friends, the mission of the friends is to raise money for the library. And our friends group has a bookstore, which is housed in the basement of our library, which is open every Saturday from 10 to 2. It's a wonderful little store. And you know, people are busy every Saturday, and you know, those funds all go to support the library. So we're very grateful to them for that. And they do some other events too. Toward the end of the year, around early December, they will do a what they have called a cookies, books, and soup sale in the past, where they sell cookies, and not just cookies, but all kinds of baked goods and soup, as well as books, to raise money for the library, as well as some things like puzzles and things that people might enjoy buying for the holidays. The other thing we are starting to do is develop a planned giving program. And planned giving is when you sort of think about the charitable organizations you would like to include in your will or in your estate plans in some way. And you know, libraries are fortunate in that sometimes we do get a bequest or somebody includes us as a beneficiary of one of their IRAs or something like that. So we want to promote that a bit more because people aren't always aware of how they can benefit the library in ways that benefit them in, as far as their taxes go. So that's something we're beginning to work on now.
Right. We're in those early stages as well, formalizing that. We do have occasional bequests, but nothing formalized. So we're working on that as well. I think in these times where some of our funding is that comes down from the state is now in question, especially for the next federal fiscal year starting in the fall, I think we're looking for every new way we can, right? Every opportunity to fill in case there are any gaps that come up. I'm very fortunate that I have a development person on staff who's almost full-time and director of development and events. So she's a great resource, and she oversees the gala auction, and I chair the book signing committee. And then we also have a board development committee, advancement committee, that is also very involved in guiding and assisting, and really they're our main cultivators of donors as well. You know, it's really important for the directors to maintain those relationships, keep their circle of friends and acquaintances and, you know, businesses that they work with, you know, let them all know what the library is doing and try to also get new people interested in the library. So it's a synergy of lots of people working together. You know, it's hard in a small town, right? In these small towns, there are a lot of amazing nonprofits in the northwest corner of Connecticut, as there are in Dutchess and Columbia counties, right? And we're all competing for the same dollars, and I think that competition will only get more fierce now as we're all facing uncertainty. So I also think we're looking at ways to work with some of these other groups, and we work with other libraries to maybe keep costs down, to leverage resource sharing, all of those things. So there are many ways to look at fundraising and grants as well, as you mentioned. So it's an important topic.
Do you apply for many grants, and who does that in your library?
I normally do the grant applications. Occasionally I will have help from somebody on the board if it's something of particular interest to them, or there's somebody that has some really good grant writing experience, but it's mostly from me. And, you know, and grants are fabulous. I think what people don't realize is that grants that are mostly available to us are grants that fund programming, right? What we would love to have is grants that would help us with operating expenses, you know, everyday operating expenses, because it's a lot of work to apply for the grants, and then we have to implement those programs. But it's a great way of launching new programs, right, and finding out what works, getting the funding, and then continuing from there.
Right.
How about you? Do you do the
grants? Yeah, I do the grant writing. And one of the issues with grants is, like with you, it's mostly for programs. And it's great, as you say, for starting out a program. It's great for one-time programs, Yeah. For ongoing programs, you know, the grant lasts a specific period of time, and then you've got to find the funds to continue the program if it's successful. Grants don't generally, granting agencies don't generally fund existing programs. They want, they all like to fund new things.
Right.
So that's always a challenge.
Yeah, it is. It is. And these grant funding organizations, a lot of them are cutting back on the size of the grants they're offering now, you know, also being cautious. So these are all things we're keeping an eye on, right?
Yes.
That's right. So what books are popular over there in New York State these days?
Well, right now, the book with the greatest interest seems to be Ocean Vuong's The Emperor of Gladness.
Oh, yeah.
It came out in May. So for those who are unfamiliar with Vuong, he's a Vietnamese-American poet and novelist. First novel was published in 2019, On Earth We're Briefly Gorgeous. This novel, The Emperor of Gladness, is set in a fictional post-industrial town in East Gladness, Connecticut, and tells the story of a 19-year-old Vietnamese-American man, Hai, who contemplates suicide but is interrupted and prevented by an older widow with dementia who persuades him to become her caregiver. And it's about the bond that develops between these two people and about kind of what it means to live on the margins of society. Vuong's writing style is very poetic and lyrical and evocative to those who have read him. So that's the one that's at the top of the list right now in our library. How about Sharon?
Well, last time we spoke, we talked about Amity Gage's Heartwood, and it's still extremely popular here. It's just back on the shelf, just came back yesterday, waiting for someone to pick it up on the hold shelf, and I was astounded at how many times it's been out already in the couple of months that it's been available. And of great interest in Sharon in particular right now is the just-published official biography of William F. Buckley by Sam Tannenhouse. The Buckleys, you might know, are probably the most famous residents that Sharon has ever had. Maybe you could say Jasper Johns now. He's still alive, and he's in town. Mm-hmm. There is a Buckley nephew of William F. Buckley who still lives in Sharon. But the family estate is still there. It's now turned into a very lovely condominium area called Great Elm, just a quarter of a mile south of where I'm sitting now. But William F. Buckley handpicked Sam Tannenhouse to be his biographer 27 years ago, believe it or not. And this book has been 27 years in the making, and I think it's about 600 or 700 pages, and they cut a lot. He gave a talk, the author, at the Historical Society last month, and he talked about how much he had to cut from the book. And no matter what you think of Buckley's politics, you can't deny that he was an extremely influential force in the conservative movement in this country. And, you know, I knew him when I was a kid from Masterpiece Theater. He was the guy who introduced Brideshead Revisited. And I remember watching that series with my dad when I was in high school. And there he was, you know, sitting with that very distinct accent that he had that everybody recognized. And a great deal of the book is devoted to the family's origins, not just in Sharon, but before his parents came to Sharon. They were both Southerners, actually, one from Texas and one from, I'm forgetting, and where and how they ended up in Sharon. And there are a lot of stories in Sharon about the Buckleys, and he was one of, I believe, 10 children. A lot of stories, and a lot of people still remember that generation of Buckleys. The last sibling just died. I think it was last year or the summer before when Jim Buckley died. We have multiple copies of the book, obviously, and they're all out right now. And that author will also be at our book signing. And Sam Tannenhouse is a really interesting guy. He was the editor of the New York Times Book Review for many years and a biographer as well. So that's what's popular here right now. What are you reading, Tammy?
Well, I just finished, and this is not a new book, Barbara Kingsolver's nonfiction book, Animal Vegetable Miracle.
That's a great book. I love that book.
Yeah, I loved it too. It's one of the books we're reading in our sustainability reading series. It's the book for June. And it's, for those who are not familiar with it, it is a story of Kingsolver families' efforts to live by eating locally, either with foods that they grew or raised themselves, or were purchased within a very within the county they lived in for a year. So only eating local produce, in season. They had to make a few exceptions. They couldn't get coffee locally, obviously, things like that. But they had right. a very few exceptions. And so it's a really interesting story about that journey, as well as a lot of just more scientific information about agriculture, our food system. It's interspersed with recipes provided by her daughter, her teenage daughter, as well as little sidebars by her husband with sort of more factual, less narrative bits of information. But a really fun read, and I learned a lot, and I'm definitely rethinking the way I buy food and eat. So I'm looking forward to our book discussion later this month on that book.
Yeah, that's great. She's a great writer, regardless. And I remember when that book came out, that was my go-to Christmas gift that year. I gave it to so many people. It was really, really remarkable. I'm just ready to start a new book. I'm very excited for Kevin Wilson's Run for the Hills. He's a great novelist from down south, actually. I think Tennessee or Alabama, I can't remember. And he wrote a book a few years ago, two novels ago of his, called Nothing to See Here, which I just loved. And they're funny books, and he's a great comedic writer, and I think we all need that right now. And this is apparently about a road trip. Some adults discover that they're actually siblings. I think the narrator, his father had left his family when he was young, and he, as an adult, decides to go figure out what happened to his father, and he discovers that his father sort of did this serially, and he has a number of half-siblings scattered all over the country, and he is driving around in the 90s in a PT Cruiser. It's set in the 90s, and it's the road trip that these half-siblings go on, discovering things about themselves. So it sounds pretty interesting. He's a great writer, a lot of fun. So looking forward to that. Do you have some great events coming up? I'm sure you do, some programs.
Me too. Yeah, in fact, related to the food issue, and this Saturday, June 14th at 2 o'clock, we have a film screening of the documentary Food and Country, produced by food writer Ruth Reichel, who's a local resident, and Ruth will be joining us for a discussion of the film afterwards. This is a documentary about the politics and economics of food in this country, and about some of the people who are working to change that to make it a healthier system. So I expect a lot
great.
Of people, we've had a lot of inquiries about it. I expect a good turnout and a lively discussion.
Sounds great.
And then on Sunday, June 29th, this is the next of our summer concerts, we have Steve Hesmer sings Broadway. He's a local performer who has traveled worldwide, national tours, cruise ships, and local stages, and then the Berkshires. So we'll have a fun Broadway afternoon at the library. Then July 1st, Tuesday, July 1st, we kick off our summer reading program, and we will be having a performance by the Story Crafters, as well as some other fun games and activities for kids as they come and pick up their reading logs and bingo cards and get ready for summer reading.
Here in Sharon, we have our ongoing Qigong class on Saturday, the 28th of June at 10:30. And on in July, we're introducing a series on AI, thanks to Tammy for introducing me to Pam, who does some tech stuff over there at the library. So that is on June 26th at 11 a.m. And we also have some great craft programs for adults, dyeing and textile work coming up this summer. So check out our website for all of those details. And our summer reading program kicks off this Saturday. So thanks, everybody. Thanks, Tammy.
Yep, thank you.
Between the Stacks is produced at the facilities of Robin Hood Radio 91.9 FM, Sharon, Connecticut. Underwriting support for Between the Stacks comes from Lakeville Books and Stationery, 329 Main Street in Lakeville, Connecticut, offering a wide selection of illustrated books, fine writing needs, and more. On the web, lakevillebooks.com.